We are joined by Jeff O'Brien from Chestnut Cambrone. He is one hell of an attorney. If you happen to be involved in the craft brewery world, he represents 60 craft breweries and distilleries. And he could answer questions about just about anything, though, not just craft breweries. Now, answer me this question. What shape are the Twins in, and what do you do about a trade? We talked about it a little bit off the air. The Twins are up by 3 over Cleveland and 4 over Chicago. They basically picked up one game on each since the All-Star break by winning 2 straight over this past weekend. But what do you think about a trade? What should they do? I don't think they should make a huge deal. If they can get something from Miguel Sano, do it. But, I mean, there's a limit because they don't have a lot they can give up.
And what they do have, Bob, I don't believe is worth trading for what they're going to get. And, you know, let's be honest. I don't see any moves. There aren't enough moves to be made to put them on the same level as the Yankees or the Astros. So we're talking about winning the division.
Yes.
And I don't think, you know, I have my list of the prospects that are the untouchables, right? Kirilloff, Miranda, Larnick, Royce Lewis, Spencer Steer, Matt Wallner, Encarnacion Strand, and Emmanuel Rodriguez. I wouldn't get rid of any of those guys for it, just so you can win a division and get smoked in the playoffs again. It's not worth it. So there's other, if they can take, you know, maybe, you know, so there's some other, you know, some other guys down there, Austin Martin or some of the, you know, some of the other, you know, lower prospects, you know, maybe they can, you know, package some of those up and get,
but they're not going to,
you
know, get anything. They're not going to get a great player out of this, and that's what they would need.
No.
But you're right. No matter what they do, they're not at the level of Houston or the Yankees, and that's very problematic.
No.
And you're fooling yourself if you think they are, or if they think themselves they are.
Absolutely, absolutely. We have to look at how many of these, you know, we're talking about. There's a number of prospects here that could fuel. Remember how, everybody needs to remember, the core of the World Series teams, primarily in 87, was a group of guys that came up through the minors together.
Yes.
And we got to remember that. That's the way you build, that's still the best way to build a winning baseball team and a consistently winning baseball team. And they have those prospects. And the last thing they want to do, in my opinion, is start jettisoning those for a quick win. I know that everybody's got this sense of urgency because of Carlos Correa and the way his contract is structured. And I'm also one that says you don't trade him either. You let the chips fall where they may. You don't. The wild card here is what, you know, if Royce Lewis was all ready to go, I'd say trade him for prospects, right, if they were starting to fade. But I think at where we are right now, just enjoy the season.
Well,
you know, just enjoy these being here. You ride it out, and that's the way it is.
Here's the problem they have: if they got rid of Correa now and tried. First of all, it negates the fact that you're bringing in a pitcher. You get rid of him. People are going to know you're thrown in the towel. And so long to this second half, or how much is left in terms of people wanting to come to the ballpark because they know you've given up already. And they may just have to ride what the rest of the season with what they have, even though everybody wants to see them do something with pitching. But I agree, they cannot give up top prospects because they're not going to get a player who will make them that much better to overcome the Yankees and the Astros. It's just not going to happen. All right, you were telling me earlier off the air about a documentary on Paramount Plus that I absolutely will watch because I'm fans of, you know, the people involved that died in that, I don't know, was it a cornfield or that Iowa field?
Yep.
Richie Valens.
Iowa cornfield, yep.
And, I mean, how many, it was the Big Bopper, right? Buddy Holly and Richie Valens. And there's always stories about guys who could have gone on that plane and didn't. But tell me what's in the documentary, and a lot of it's centered around Don McLean, right?
Yeah, well, the documentary is about it's more focused on Don McLean and his writing American Pie, and you know, for those that maybe don't know this, we sit here now in 2022, and you know, they celebrate the anniversary of the plane crash, and everybody knows Buddy Holly and Richie Valens and the Big Bopper, and have probably heard some of the stories, but that event and those artists had largely faded into obscurity. We were coming in, you know, a decade later in the late 60s until Don McLean wrote the song. And, you know, the line about the, you know, the bad, you know, he references the newspaper hitting his front step and the plane crash, and he had dedicated the album, his album that was that where American Pie was on, to Buddy Holly, and that's what triggered the focus again on the artists that were killed in the plane crash. And I remember watching something years ago. There's a, you know, there's so many documentaries out there about the, you know, they call it the Day the Music Died, right? And the old VH1 Behind the Music was always a really good one, and they interviewed, you know, a lot of family members, and Waylon Jennings, who of course was in Buddy Holly's band at the time, and had to fill in for Buddy the next night in Moorhead. I mean, this is how close this comes to Minnesota. This happened in Clear Lake, Iowa, the night before they were in Montevideo, Minnesota, and the night after they were scheduled to be in Moorhead, Minnesota. It was called the Winter Dance Party. But it was really interesting about this documentary is it's more of a focus on the American Pie song and also some of the other lyrics. You know, there's hot debates over what the rest of the song means. And Don McLean has been real tight-lipped about it for a long, long time. So he took the occasion of the 50th anniversary of the song to explain some of the lyrics. And there's some really powerful scenes at the end when he goes to the Surf Ballroom where the Winter Dance Party was the last night of Buddy Holly's and Richie Valens and the Big Boppers lives. They performed on that stage. And he plays American Pie. And Richie Valens' wow. sister's in the audience. Wow. And it's a really... really well done documentary. And so anybody that's a music fan, whether you're a Don, you know, you like that song American Pie, or whether you know are Buddy Holly, Richie Valens, Big Bopper fans, check it out. It was really, really, really well done.
So where was the Surf Ballroom? Was that in Montevideo?
Clear Lake, Iowa.
Oh, Clear Lake is okay. So then I'm sorry, the plane went down after they performed. It went down right away in Clear Lake. Is that
yeah,
what it was?
They
okay.
played, yeah, they played this. Yeah, they played the Surf Ballroom in Clear Lake, Iowa, and then they were taken. They were on buses, and Holly didn't want to be on the bus anymore. It was, you know, the heater was breaking down. He wanted to get ahead of it and get some laundry done, and so they took him to the Mason City Airport and took off from there. And the pilot, the cause of the crash was pilot error. The pilot was going down, and he thought he was going up. He couldn't.
Oh my God!
Got disoriented, couldn't read the controls, and you know, and they were only on the in the air like about 3 minutes before the plane crashed.
You know,
if you go up 35, if you're on 35W, there's signs. If you get to Clear Lake, Iowa, there is a memorial in the cornfield where it happened.
Well,
the farmer that owns the field, they put it up.
My son, this goes back a couple of years. My oldest son Sawyer. We were in Des Moines for a horse show, and he and his friends stopped in Clear Lake. They wanted to see it. I said, "Well, what did you see? Did you find, you know, what did you find?" And he goes, "Well, I was walking around, and I picked up a pair of black glasses. I didn't know what them. You know, somebody must have lost them. The iconic Buddy Holly glasses.
Yeah. The farmer. There's a memorial right where the plane ended up, where it has their names on it and this little metal sculpture thing. But there's also They also put up a sculpture of the horn, Buddy Holly's trademark horn rim glasses, and people going to hang sunglasses and other things on that memorial. So that's probably what he was talking about.
He was talking about finding a pair of glasses. He was joking that he found a pair of black glasses laying in the field.
Gotcha.
Yeah, he was
gotcha,
the comic.
Yeah.
All right, now here's my question, and I've asked this before of people: if he'd lived, would Buddy Holly have been, you know, as big a deal as Elvis? Would he continue? Because he was a prolific songwriter. I mean, how big would he have been? Or would he have had like a Roy Orbison career where he would have disappeared for decades and then maybe come back and played in the Traveling Wilburys with Orbison and, and other musicians?
What I think about the three of them, first of all, you know, the Big Bopper was more known for these novelty songs. He probably would have gone back to radio and
yes.
that kind of thing. With Buddy, I think Buddy would have gone on to be more of like a producer, right? One of those types of guys that stopped recording and starting to, you know, maybe find talent and work with other talent on their records. With Richie Valens, I joked with my wife this weekend. I said, I'll bet you Richie Valens would have been on stage jamming with Jimi Hendrix at Woodstock. I mean, Richie was a really phenomenal guitar player. Everybody knows La Bamba, but my favorite of his, he did his take on the classic Spanish song Malaguena, and it's his version of it. It's a rock and roll version, and it's phenomenal. So I think Richie Valens would have actually been the one that would have been the biggest star of the bunch going forward. I think Buddy would have faded out behind into the producer's booth.
Well, Buddy Holly he may have wound up producing Richie Valens. How old was Valens? 17?
Yeah.
He was only 17.
He was 17.
Unbelievable.
He was 17.
What he did.
And the crazy thing is that everything he did happened in an arc of 8 months. All the music you hear from him is a 17-year-old kid with 8 months, and that's what he produced. It's amazing.
Absolutely incredible. You're absolutely right. All right, now, a final thought on this. Crime has not just come out of Minneapolis. I have a moratorium, won't go there. But it's also coming to your part of you live in Albertville, and they're stealing catalytic converters. Mm-hmm. Unbelievable.
Yeah. So we live in a neighborhood that's considered one of the, the more premier neighborhoods in Albertville, at least the city used to call it that. And it's sort of isolated. It's kind of isolated from some of the other neighborhoods in the city. And we have a Facebook group, and people were posting that there were a catalytic converter thefts in parts of the neighborhood.
Oh my gosh.
So the Minneapolis blast radius has now extended all the way past Maple Grove, up 94, past Rogers, and is now at Albertville. And, I could say that this is really a symptom in my mind of Minneapolis not being able to get its act together in terms of policing its crime problem.
Well, to our listeners in Hibbing and Worthington, watch out, because it's spreading out. And, Duluth and St. Cloud as well. All right, Jeff, as always, greatly appreciated. Attorney Jeff O'Brien from Chestnut Cambrone. Take a quick break. The BS Show will be right back.